When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm too old for this shit.
This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
All right, folks, welcome back. We're back. Back in time. That's right. It's time for part two of the Decibel Geek Podcast presents Year in Review 1987. What a good time we had with the first one, but we're back for part two. I'm Aaron Camaro. Joining me, as always, my partner in crime here at the podcast, Decibel Geek style every single week, Chris Zinzak.
How's it going, man?
It's going great. I had a good time last week with 87. Very informative. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I did too. We had some good feedback on that. And then, of course, you know, since we only did a half the year, we had people, why didn't you play this and why didn't you play that? And
I'm like, patience. I kind of expected that, you know, because there's a lot when you only cover half the year. That means we left the whole other half of the year out. And I was thinking, oh, there's going to be a ton of people going, you didn't play this. Mm-hmm. You left that out. But like you said, just be patient. We're back today for part two.
And we'll hopefully satisfy most of you, but you can't please everybody. There's a lot of music released in a year's time, so and only so much time we have to record this stuff.
Yeah, I think we got a pretty good grasp on it, though. I don't think we're going to leave too many people out.
Yeah, before we get into things, though, we got a few business items we got to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us who the Geek of the Week is this week?
All right. Our Geek of the Week this week is Rob Simmons. He's from Charlotte, North Carolina. No, mm-hmm. No relation to the Demon, I don't think.
I don't think so.
He found our show through melodicrock.com, mm-hmm. and the dude loves it.
Yeah, that I want to. If anyone from Melodic Rock is listening, I really want to thank you, because that site has, without fail, every time I release a press release or anything, they always put a link up on that site, and it's brought a lot of traffic to our show.
And it's a great website.
Very,
you know,
good,
you want to get your rock news, you know, get it fast, get it fresh, you know, get a good take on everything. Melodicrock.com is a great place to do just that.
Yeah, so Rob, thanks for jumping on board. Hope you go back and listen to the back catalog and continue to listen, and enjoy being Geek of the Week. Enjoy that Monopoly money we're sending you, and
don't
the prestige.
Forget the glory.
Yeah. And if you're listening on MaximumThreshold.net, it is Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and glad to have you on the show. And if you never want to miss an episode, just subscribe through iTunes, search Decibel Geek, and you can find us every week, usually around Wednesday, Thursday, you know, at the latest.
And it's free.
Free every week. Got a lot of new writers on board, and the regular writers. Wally is doing a great job heading up the website.
The website's just popping lately.
Yeah, and the writers are releasing articles that tie in with the theme of the week that we're doing on the show, so it's like synergy.
Yeah, Wally, Rich, Brian, Andrew, Jay Alexander, the whole crew over there, mm-hmm. taking care of the website for us, and you know, we take care of this end with the show every week.
Yeah.
But take your time, you know, talking about rock websites that are great for your news, and you know, the Decibel Geek Podcast is more, I think, like personal experience stories. You know, these guys are going out getting interviews, you know, and they're all like us. You know, they love hard rock and heavy metal, and so like us, that's why they're doing it.
Yeah.
So the articles are always real insightful.
Yeah.
That's what I really enjoy about our website's articles and our writers, is how insightful they all are.
And I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the website address?
It's www.dbgeekshow.blogspot.com.
Very good, man.
Thank you.
One last item of business for self-promotion. Aaron and I were recently interviewed by Furies Magazine, and you can find that at, let me get the website address right, furiesmag.com.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
I want to thank Liz Kelly Zook for featuring us and doing an interview with us, and check that magazine out for a lot of fashion and music info, and appreciate her taking the time out to talk to us.
Yeah, it was pretty cool when she they were looking for people to interview, and I talked to her, and she told me right away that she wasn't familiar with Decibel Geek Podcast, but she listened to it and really dug it. And she said, even if nobody else from the website, you know, comes to your show, you've gained one more loyal listener. So thank you, Liz.
So we're up to three now.
We're up to
awesome.
Three.
All right.
And so, my buddy Eddie up in Wisconsin, who I pay to subscribe.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Payola's not
checks,
dead.
Checks in the mail, buddy.
Exactly. So I guess we need to get the DeLorean started up, don't we?
Fire it up. Get it up to 87 miles an hour, because that's where we're going, 1987.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
You don't want to give everybody the wrong idea by starting out the Decibel Geek Podcast with that, right?
No, but we're doing a year in review, so you got you have to pay attention to what you know what happened in the year. And Michael Jackson's Bad album was certainly a big part of that year.
Oh, it was huge. Michael Jackson ruled the world back then,
and he was still black.
Well, he was starting.
He was starting to change.
Yeah, it was starting.
He was caramel. Looked,
yeah, slightly butterscotched back then in '87.
And who can forget the wonderful parody that Weird Al did called Fat?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I like Weird Al better than Michael Jackson.
But yeah, and of course the little audio clip there you heard was Ronald Reagan doing the tear down this wall speech at the Brandenburg Gate. He was addressing Mikhail Gorbachev, leader of Russia at the time, and as we knew, the Berlin Wall wound up falling later on. So that was a very pivotal speech.
Yeah, it was a pretty big deal back then.
Yeah, we don't get political, but, you know, that was a big deal that year.
It was.
Year. So,
it really was.
But Michael Jackson's Bad, it was his first studio album after Thriller, which was the best-selling album of all time.
All time.
This album would produce 5 number one singles in the U.S., a record which to this day has not been broken.
That's so. Michael Jackson, you know. To me, personally, while all the Michael Jackson craziness was going on, you know, in the years before he passed away, you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening are like me that just didn't get it, you know. But, you know, it's like, who's buying all these albums? But Michael Jackson was a guy that he appealed to a mass difference of
everybody.
People, you know. Yeah, so everybody kind of got into Michael Jackson.
I had a cassette copy of this. I mean, well, there's Slash appears on Dirty Diana. Michael Jackson was still very much a rock and roll person even back at that time. But, you know, aside from all the nuttiness, the Bubbles the Chimp and the sleeping in the deprivation chamber and all that stuff, I mean, he was still a very vital recording artist at this time.
Right.
And he was huge. And if you were a kid back then, you couldn't escape Michael Jackson. He was probably the biggest thing in the world. So,
absolutely. You know, and talking about Michael Jackson, like you said, 45 million albums sold. I mean, that's something on that right there. And then on top of that, on the Bad album, there were 5 number one singles.
Yeah.
There was only one song on the entire album that wasn't released as a single. I mean, it's an album of singles, all of them.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I listened to it quite a bit, and then
it's crazy.
That was released on August 31st. Also in August, which we're into August now for '87, Def Leppard released Hysteria, which you want to talk about landmark albums.
And yeah, Hysteria was awesome.
It was the longest rock album ever released as a single LP or cassette.
Wow!
Without it becoming a double album, so huge album was flying off the shelves, and
back when Def Leppard still rocked.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I dig the first couple albums the most from them.
Yeah, me too.
But I will say Hysteria at its time, and this is, you know, I go back to the same argument I've made, is going back and listening to the stuff from '87, it sounded so fresh and awesome at the time.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily age well later. It's like it ends up sounding too much of that time.
Right.
Not timeless. You know,
it's got that kind of cheesiness to it almost.
And, you know, you can't
it's
blame...
It's like stereotypical of the
'80s. Well, you can't blame... You know, Rick Allen for losing his arm, but at the same, which, you know, everyone knows that clip we play. But, you know, he had to end up using a robotic drum kit. So, I mean, if anyone gets a pass, it's him.
Right.
But it did change their sound.
Stevie Clark's still killing it on this album.
Yeah, he was great. And, Michael Jackson's Bad, this album was like a greatest hits album on its own.
Right.
Not very many songs were not released as singles. Here's one that I thought was pretty good that didn't get any radio play, and this is off of the Hysteria album. This is a song called Run Riot.
Everybody, I think when it comes to albums from that genre, from that time in 87, it's the, like we said before in the first episode of 87, mm-hmm. it's the polishness of it. It's mm-hmm. the how squeaky clean the sound is.
Yeah.
And, you know, for rock, like we said before, it's supposed to be dirty, mean, nasty rock mm-hmm. and roll.
Yeah.
You know, so when you over polish it like that, it kind of takes away the soul of rock a little bit.
But back, you know, and it's funny because back then, that's what I wanted. I don't know, I was speaking from the standpoint of an 11-year-old just getting into rock.
And yet today, you're not a Nickelback fan.
I have a small confession to make.
Uh-oh. Oh, really? This ought to be good. Oh, yeah? Wait a minute. Stop the presses. I bring up Nickelback. You're getting a little flush in the face, turning a little red over there. What is this?
Let's come out of 87 for just a second.
Okay, just for a second.
Now, it's not a big confession, but Victor, our friend from Mars Attacks Radio, who's always constantly trying to convert me into a Nickelback fan, he actually sent me a link to like their YouTube page or something, saying because they're going to release some new ballad or something.
Yeah.
And which, you know, no news there. A ballad from Nickelback would have shocked. But I was like, well, let me go ahead and click through onto the YouTube page and just look. And they had a song on there, which I hadn't heard before because I don't listen to the radio anymore. But it's a song that was released a few months ago called This Means War. Have you heard this one?
I think so.
I didn't want to strangle them after hearing it.
Nice.
I didn't love it, but I didn't want to kill them. So that's progress, I guess.
Right. And I was thinking about that kind of when we were talking last week about 1987 and how big Bon Jovi is. Mm-hmm. We kind of talked about like bands that begat other bands. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Bon Jovi for 87 is to Nickelback today. I think there's a lot of similarities between the popularity and the slick overproduction of it.
I see your point, but
the fact that they were a rock band at heart,
yeah.
But then they became so, you know, I don't want to say tainted, but yeah, tainted by, you know, their own success,
yeah.
That they kind of became different than maybe what the original vision was. I bet you if you went back and listened to some really early Nickelback, there's probably some really good stuff on there.
Yeah, I'm not ready to go. I'm ready to take that leap.
We're not ready for that yet. Okay, that's all right. But yeah, you know, baby steps, my friend. Baby steps. We'll get you there.
What, are you going to try to convert me now?
I'm not the biggest Nickelback fan either, but you know what? I don't really listen to them, so it's hard for me to say.
Okay.
You know, I know what I hear on the radio constantly, you know, and everywhere else. And so to me, it's too much, and it makes me not want to like it.
Okay, good.
So, but that doesn't say that they don't deserve to be liked, or if we actually sat down one day and gave them a real chance, maybe we'd be, you know, say, hey, Nickelback's not bad.
You're fired. Okay,
back to 87.
Since this is your last episode,
we'll go back to 87 before you fired me.
Yeah, okay. Well played, my friend. Okay.
Nice.
Other August releases, not Nickelback. Loudness released Hurricane Eyes. Twisted Sister released Love Is for Suckers.
Love Is for Suckers is kind of a funny album because, again, it's 1987 and it's always, you know, it sounds like it's poppy and slick and the Bon Jovis and the Def Leppards are ruling the world right now as far as hard rock goes.
Mm-hmm.
Twisted Sister kind of goes along that road on this album a little bit. There's one song on there, I think it's called Wake a Sleeping Giant, which is like a classic, heavy Twisted Sister song, but the rest of it's all kind of keyboardy, cheesy kind of 1987 stuff.
I had lost track of them by that point, personally. But and then Metallica released the $5.98 EP, Garage Days Revisited.
Which is the total opposite of what we were talking about with Def Leppard and Twisted Sister.
This is good raw stuff.
Oh, yeah. It don't get much more raw than this, but so heavy, so cool. When this album came out, I mean, it was cool because you got an inside look at these other tracks that Metallica had done and that, you know, not a lot of people had gotten to hear.
Yeah.
And so then when it was released, and it's cheaper than other cassettes and CDs, you know, it's everybody had it. You know, it sold a ton, and it really did a lot for kicking off thrash metal.
Yeah, and I when I said $5.98 EP, I didn't mean that that's just what it costs. That's what the name of it is.
That is also the name, yeah.
Although most people just call it Garage Days.
Right, but that was like the suggested retail price.
Yeah.
They put it right on, basically named the album that so that, you know, stores couldn't go around trying to charge more for it. Pretty cool, Metallica, then.
And nowadays, if they did that, people would be like, what? It's not 99 cents on iTunes? What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. Well, nowadays, you know, it's a lot more Metallica versus the fans, it seems like a lot. It's been that way ever since, you know, basically since, you know, the Load and Reload albums came out. But back then, you know, look at what they're doing for the fans. They're making sure you're not getting ripped off at your local Walmart or Pomita or Shopko or wherever it is you're buying your cassette tapes at in 1987.
And this was only five tracks, and you wanted to play one from this one. Which one did you pick?
Oh, yeah. What did we pick off this one? I lost my notes.
You picked a...
Any one of them's good. Just play something.
This is the Budgie cover, Crash Course and Brain Surgery. I do too, and
love it.
And you know, they knew how to pick good covers. Metallica always has.
Yeah,
and
they did.
And Budgie is a great band, as we've mentioned in previous episodes.
We've played Budgie on this show.
Budgie's a very underrated group. We should play more of their stuff in the future.
I agree.
Also, in released in August, Midnight Oil released Diesel and Dust. A lot of people don't remember that, but if you remember the bald Australian dude with the high voice,
the song "The Beds Are Burning."
Beds Are Burning.
Yeah, that was huge back then. I mean, that was on MTV. The video
came up
like every 5 minutes. It was up. I've got one that was, we'll have to save this for our next Bizarro covers, but I got a band called Sinner doing a cover of that on my iPod.
I haven't heard that.
They rock it out, man. Huh. And it's really, you don't think about what a cool song it was then until they really crank up the distortion on it. And then you say, wow, this really had potential to be a metal tune.
They were one of those bands that was just sort of here today and gone tomorrow. Like they were huge for a few minutes and then just gone.
Yeah, back to Australia.
And then Jane's Addiction released their first album in August of 87.
Yeah.
And Aerosmith released Permanent Vacation, their comeback album.
They're back. They're off drugs. They're all cleaned up, and this is what you get.
Yeah, and they Permanent Vacation was huge, obviously, with Dude Looks Like a Lady being the first big hit off of that.
Yeah.
And then Angel, like, you know, we've had people say don't ever do a Power Ballads episode. If we did one, Angel would definitely be on there, because that's a well-written power ballad.
Yeah, it is.
It's bluesy. And
Janie's Got a Gun off that one as well?
Yeah. No,
that's the next album. That's right.
Yeah,
Angels. You're right. That's what I was
thinking. Right. Ragdoll was on this
album. Ragdoll, that's it.
This is when they started working with Desmond Child on a few songs also.
It shows.
Yeah.
It shows because they went from being like you said, a dirty, nasty, tough rock band, you know, until they basically just couldn't physically do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody gets cleaned up. They come back with this album. You can tell the Desmond Child influence on it
because
it's very poppy. And the amount of money they made off it, off the singles, the charting of all the singles, it shows that, you know, in 87, that works.
Yeah, all three singles released charted in the top 20. And it was first Aerosmith album to attain both silver and gold certification by the British phonographic industry. And the album's title later referenced in the song Amazing on Get a Grip, although this album is much better than Get a Grip, in my opinion.
Yeah, because when they came back with this one, and the thing about it is as many times as you've heard, you know, Dude Looks Like a Lady or Ragdoll or Angel, you know, as overplayed as those songs are, the backtracks on this one are really good.
Yeah, and this is probably my favorite from the album for as far as the deeper cuts. This is the title track.
Yeah.
Anselmo.
I have to fix the plumbing. I want to mow the lawn. Put in a pool next month.
Listen to the Decibel Geek podcast on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones with Stitcher. Stitcher's smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
He's Spuds McKenzie, Bud Light's original party animal.
Ghostbuds, go! Ghostbuds, go!
Yeah, welcome back. Pink Floyd, Learning to Fly.
So mellow.
That was a huge album that year. Momentary Lapse of Reason. It was their first album after the legal battle with Roger Waters.
Yep, that was the year the world cracked in half for Pink Floyd fans. The Civil War began.
It was really the first, I remember hearing The Wall because my parents would play it on the radio, but, you know, I never really connected it with Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
But this album was the first time I really became aware of Pink Floyd, and the tour for this grossed $135 million worldwide, and was only equaled by the earnings of Michael Jackson and U2 combined. That's how big that tour was.
People love them some Pink Floyd. And, you know, in Pink Floyd, they deliver the goods in concert, you know, still to this day.
Yeah, we're
in they're all different versions of what they got going on, whether it's Roger Waters solo or Pink Floyd themselves. They've earned their reputation as one of the best live shows a guy can see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're really into Pink Floyd or not, you're going to see some pretty amazing stuff at a concert.
Yeah, and very good musicianship. You know, a very solid band.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild to be able to come back after, you know, losing Roger Waters and come back with such a huge album after that. And, you know, you talk to somebody who's a big Pink Floyd fan and, you know, you're either a David Gilmour guy or you're a Roger Waters guy. And David Gilmour guys, they get upset, you know, because I talked to a guy one time and he's like, yeah, oh man, I love Pink Floyd. I'm like, yeah, you know, I always like the old Roger Waters stuff. And he looked at me like I can't believe you just said that. You know, you disgust me, you know, kind of a thing, you know. And it's like, hey, man, I just like the Roger Waters. He killed Pink Floyd. You know, they could have been so much more if he would have never been involved. And it's like, hey, man, take it easy, you know?
I still think
Kiss is better than Floyd, and then watch him freak out.
Right. Yeah. I'm not enough of a diehard Floyd fan. I like them both. I mean, I like both eras of the group. But,
yeah, me too.
Pink Floyd, known for a humongous staging with lighting and stuff, and we go from that to a band with about as minimal as it gets, but a band that definitely rocks live. We're talking about Motorhead.
They don't need all the bells and whistles. They've got exactly what they need to kick ass.
Well, they've got Lemmy.
They got Lemmy.
That's all you need, right?
I think so. That's like if you're putting together your rock and roll business plan, all you need is Lemmy in place and the rest will follow.
Yeah, so we're talking about September of 87, the Pink Floyd album released September 7th. The Motorhead released Rock and Roll on September 5th.
Two bands that did not tour together in 87.
That would be an interesting tour. But the Rock and Roll album, pretty good album. Like I said, I've mentioned before, I'm late to the party as far as Motorhead goes, so I'm discovering a lot of this stuff for the first time. I just didn't pay attention.
I'm noticing that Motorhead is rapidly becoming the most overplayed band on our show now. It used to be Anthrax.
It was Anthrax,
but
now they're getting a lot of play here.
You know, because when you do these year in review shows,
yeah.
Motorhead comes out with an album every year. So every year on the year in review show we do, you can pretty much guarantee there's probably going to be some Motorhead on there.
Yeah. And you know, the main song that was probably the biggest from this album is Eat the Rich, which is a very awesome song, but you've heard that one a million times. So I wanted to play the third track from the album. This is a track called Blackheart.
I don't like to boast.
the band with the best work ethic in rock and roll, kicking them out every single year, including 1987, Motorhead.
Yeah, and that was the first album that the band did as a four-piece.
Yeah?
Yeah, they had you had Lemmy, you had Phil Campbell on guitar, you had Phil Filthy Animal Taylor on drums, and Wurzel.
Yeah, the late Wurzel.
Rush released Hold Your Fire in 87 in September. And then the big story of the year for us metalheads was Jethro Tull releasing Crest of a Knave.
Travesty.
What do you mean? It was the best hard rock heavy metal album for the Grammys, right?
Travesty befalls the Grammy Awards in 1987 when Jethro Tull is awarded the best metal performance of the year over Metallica.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? I mean, I remember watching that.
I remember
just being,
it too.
Being appalled.
Yeah, it was a big what the fuck moment.
Was that the same year Guns N' Roses got on stage all drunk and swearing and stuff?
I think so. Yeah, because Appetite for Destruction was brand new. Yeah,
I remember watching that with my dad, you know, and then like it went from, you know, Metallica losing to Jethro Tull, and it's just like, what the hell's going on here? To Guns N' Roses going up and doing that, and I'm just like, wow, that is so cool. And my dad's like just shaking his head, just like, I can't believe they let that on TV.
Well,
like, man, that's awesome.
And then one of my favorite quotes from a Grammy Awards is a few years later when Metallica finally won the award, and Lars Ulrich got up and said, I guess it's a good thing Jethro Tull didn't release an album this year, right?
Yeah, that's funny. I like it. It's clever, and it's sticking it to him, which it's still, it blows my mind even to think back on it now. How can this be?
It just shows how clueless award shows are.
Yeah, the Grammy Awards, way to go, guys.
Well,
still catching hell in 2012 over that.
Yeah.
That happened in 1987. People don't forget that shit. That was out of line.
We're happy to keep the outrage alive.
That's right. You deserve it.
Well, one band that definitely hasn't won a Grammy, but a band that a lot of people seem to like is Lizzie Borden.
I love Lizzie Borden. I checked out Lizzie Borden when I was young. My Uncle Bruce had the album of it. I think he had like a double live album. Mm-hmm. And then from there I was just hooked. You know, Lizzie Borden, a band that's heavy, they rock. Lizzie Borden kind of like I was trying to explain to my wife who Lizzie Borden was, and I just said he's kind of like the poor man's Ozzy Osbourne. He's mm-hmm. like the poor man, the poor American
shock rocker
Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean I remember Lizzie Borden mostly from the Decline of Western Civilization Part Two movie, and for years all I knew was their cover of Born to Be Wild, because I never really got a chance to listen to the stuff.
Yeah,
but I've given it a shot lately, and there's some pretty good stuff there. He's still around.
Yeah, they're still around, still putting out new music. You guys check it out on iTunes. Lizzie Borden, Alive and Kicking. Here's one you got to check this out. This one you want to crank up extra loud. I love this song. It's Lizzie Borden with Me Against the World.
It's just me.
You gotta love those killer gang vocals coming at you in 1987 style.
That's a great song.
It is a great song.
I mean, that's some seriously overlooked music right
I'm
there.
Telling you, Lizzie Borden does
great
not
voice.
Get the credit he deserves. I mean, and nowadays, looking back then,
yeah,
killer voice.
Great,
you know,
voice.
Great band.
Lead guitarist, Joe Holmes, who played with Ozzy for a little while.
That's right.
I mean, that... Check that stuff out. That's pretty
I'm
good stuff.
You, Lizzie Borden is really good, and most people probably don't even know who he is.
No.
Sad. And one of these days on Radio Sucks Radio Show, we'll have to play some of his new stuff, because he's still putting out some killer music.
Great set of pipes there.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Well, one of my favorite bands is the Ramones, who released an album in September of 87. They released the Halfway to Sanity album, not one of their better records.
Yeah, the Ramones are kind of starting to peter out a little bit at this point, huh?
Not starting to, really. Yeah. It was a rough era for them. Pet Sematary was a pretty good track. No, not on this album, but... a lot of the songs on this are not that great. It was the last album they did with Richie Ramone playing drums for them, before Marky came back, and I think it's one of the last albums that Dee Dee was on. It's okay, but it was just like you could tell they were just kind of lost at that point.
Yeah.
But I will say that the...
So where does the Ramones fit in a Casio happy Bon Jovi ruled world?
Yeah, I mean, it was an era not tailor-made for them.
No, it's not like the Ramones could, say, hey, we're going to add a keyboard player and go for a big pop single,
Well,
the fans would just... Ugh.
They went for the big pop single in the late 70s, with End of the Century, which I like that stuff. I like it when... I'm more of a Joey guy than a Johnny guy. I like the early stuff that was hard edge, too, but I'm more of the... Joey was a big fan of the old Motown era, and, he wanted to bring that element into the punk
music. A
little
more soulful.
Yeah, and I like that era better, which is why I picked this song. This is the opening track. This is I Wanna Live. I dig that song, and one thing I don't want to go on a huge tangent about the Ramones, but one thing, if you really go back, if you've never seen the End of the Century documentary, you really, really should check it out, even if you're not a Ramones fan, because it gets you, that documentary is what got me into the band, because the story is so compelling of, what they've gone through.
Yeah.
Especially all the tension between the members of the band. Johnny and Joey hated each other basically from 1980 all the way to the end, and it was like rarely spoke. They'd travel in these tight buses and never talk to each other.
Can you imagine being in a band situation like that with somebody and then, having to sit across from them, having to...
All the time.
You have to get along with this person enough to carry on, but deep down, the guy hates your guts.
Yeah, I mean, they really hated each other, and it was sad, and if you really pay attention to Joey's lyrics from those years, it's heart-wrenching reading some of those. And Joey Ramone was just one of the most tragic characters in rock history.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell he always felt he was an outcast, he was different, and, as much success as he had, you could tell he was a very lonely person, and, there's a lot of alienation in the lyrics of the Ramone stuff. A lot of people are like, it's just three chord punk, mindless stuff. But no, I mean, listen to the lyrics that he wrote. I mean, the guy was a tormented soul if there ever was one. And but as many great memories as they gave us, boy, there's quite a story behind that band for sure.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out that documentary.
Yeah. So all right, now we're into the Kiss section of the show.
Oh yeah.
Kiss released Crazy Nights on September 18th of 1987.
Probably my least favorite Kiss album.
This is the album that made me fall in love with Kiss. Shows how we're different. And I'm proud to say it, because I mean, I like the melodic rock of the late 80s, and it overall has not aged well.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, when it came out I loved it.
Well, and it's embarrassing for me to admit, but the song that got me into Kiss was Reason to Live, the ballad off of it. It was on MTV.
For shame.
Well, I was into Poison before Kiss, so it was a natural, at least I moved up.
Hey, but there's some other really great songs on that album.
There are. There's a lot of
besides Reason to Live.
And I think there's a couple of Paul songs that still sound okay today, but most of Paul's stuff did not age well. Gene's actually aged much better.
Right, because Gene still had, it was still rock songs. But then you got to remember at this time, Gene really wasn't too involved in the Kiss machine. I mean, he's out in Hollywood. No. The Trick or Treat movie comes out in 86.
Yeah, so they were...
And Wanted Dead or Alive comes out in 87.
Yeah, he was very busy.
Malak al-Rahim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what a horrible movie.
I liked him a lot better as Nuke.
And was it, which one was it where, which one was it with Rutger Hauer? Was that one?
That's Wanted Dead or Alive.
Yeah, the scene where he's got the grenade in his mouth.
Yeah.
Rutger Hauer says, fuck the bonus, and pulls the pen out.
Blows his head up.
Yeah. That's the only redeemable scene in that movie.
So while Gene Simmons is on vacation, they bring in a guy named Phil Ashley. And Phil Ashley has a Casio.
So he did the keyboard parts on this album? Yeah.
And he was like the fifth member of Kiss in 1987.
And Ron Nevison produced the album, which, for those that don't know, Ron Nevison was on a hot streak as a producer back in the 80s. He did the Ultimate Sin album for Ozzy, which yielded some top 10 hits, and then obviously the Bad Animals album from Heart. He was responsible for that. He was kind of known for resuscitating classic rock acts.
And adding synthesizer to it.
Well, you know, it worked for those other artists.
Cheesy synthesizer.
And I think Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons were like, well, it's working for these other acts. Why don't we give it a shot?
If Bon Jovi's doing it,
that's exactly what was going on.
Yep.
The Kiss was following everything Bon Jovi and Def Leppard did, and they were trying to ride a trend. I hate to say it, but
yeah,
it's true.
It's the truth, and you listen to the album Crazy Nights, it's easy to see.
But there's some good songs on here, though.
There are some really good songs. What do we got lined up for this one?
Well, this is your pick. You don't remember?
No, I told you. I lost my notes, I'm just kind of going with the flow here.
This
That's how professional I am today.
Well, this is one of the Gene songs that has aged well. This song's called Hell or High Water.
Oh, yeah.
Be a member of the Decibel Geek Army?
You slimy scumbag, get on your face and give me 25.
Join us on our fan page at facebook.com/decibelgeek. Got a question, comment, request, or legal threat? Call us on our voicemail hotline at 540-DB-GEEK-1. That's 540-324-3351.
One Jump Street is brought to you by Mattel. Look for the Mattel toy.
You're not fully clean unless you're set fully clean.
Make it in early, make it in late. Pizza Hut, make it in great.
Live and direct from Midland, Texas, Jessica McClure is up. She's alive. What a fighter.
We're back. Who can forget that? If you were around in 87, you remember Baby Jessica.
You damn right you do, because it was such a big deal in 87.
Huge.
You know, and I'm talking about, like, I was about 12 years old in 87. I remember this vividly,
mm-hmm,
because it was such a huge thing. The kid fell down in the well. She was a little girl. I don't. She was young. I don't
she
know
was
how
a,
old.
She was
like a toddler.
A toddler, yeah.
Yeah, fell down in a well.
Old.
And it was a pretty big rescue effort to get her out, but, you know, miraculously they did. They got her out,
yeah,
and she was fine.
She was down there for 2 days. And
that's wild. And that's what it was, because it was 2 days. That's why it was such a big deal.
And the reports coming from where she was singing songs to herself to keep herself company.
She was singing Crazy Nights.
I don't think so.
It was revealed
she sang My Way
a few years later on that the reason she jumped in the well to begin with
was
she
heard Crazy Nights?
Escape the U2.
she
heard some U2
God.
Playing and just ran away. I got to find a nice quiet place to sing some Crazy Nights to myself.
But yeah, it was a big deal, and it was all over national television. I remember the night they pulled her out. It was me and my buddy were trading baseball cards in my bedroom and watching it on TV.
I remember watching it with my parents, and they pulled her out, and it was just like...
It was very emotional.
Yeah, it was one of those things, because like you said, there wasn't a lot going on in 87, you know, tragically in the world, like there is like every other week now.
Yeah.
You know, so everything was pretty mellow. So when this happened, it really captured the whole nation, pulled everybody together, because everybody wanted to see this poor little kid after 2 days be brought out of the well and be safe. And, you know, it was cool. They show the diagrams on TV about different ways they were digging in and, you know, all the different ways they were trying to get her out. And after 2 days, you know, it was like the whole nation had a huge sigh of relief. And it was kind of a good feeling after all that, that one little tragedy in Texas like that really pulled the whole country together.
It did. It was very memorable. If you know, I know some of you listening to this are having vivid memories of where you were when this happened. It was one of those things where you don't forget where you were when it happened.
Right.
Know?
And but, in comparison today, you know, tragedies happen all the time. And
yeah,
there's
sad,
so
isn't it?
There's so many tragedies happening nowadays that, you know, Jessica McClure today could fall in a well 10 times a week and it would never make the news.
I mean, it would make it, but it'd just be a small story.
It'd be buried underneath all the other crazy bullshit going on in 2012.
Yeah.
Let's stay here in 87 where it's safe.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds good to me. Well, as we had mentioned in part one, Motley Crue released Girls, Girls, Girls in 87.
Oh, the only thing not safe is our virgin ears and Motley Crue and our virgin eyes and not being able to watch certain videos.
Yeah, because they released the song You're All I Need as a single. And a lot of you will not remember this song being released as a single because MTV refused to play the video and radio stations wouldn't play the song either.
Well, and it's a great song, but it's a very deep subject matter.
Well, it was praised by Jon Bon Jovi as the best ballad Motley Crue has ever written. So if someone who knows about ballads, it's Jon Bon Jovi.
And it's a hard-edged ballad. You know, it suits Motley Crue.
Well, and this is when informed of this, Nikki Sixx laughed because of the gruesome meaning behind the song. The song's about a girlfriend that Nikki Sixx used to have who he thought cheated on him with Jack Wagner, who was a soap opera actor on General Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And also, he had a song out called All I Need. And
yeah,
the rumor,
that's where I think I know that guy from.
The rumor is that All I Need is written about Nikki's ex.
And, oh, no.
So Nikki switched the purpose of the song and wrote this version and gave it to his girlfriend. So he had no intention on recording it, but the rest of the band loved it, and they were like, we have to put it on the Girls, Girls, Girls album.
Because lyrically, it really is a deep and dark
song.
It's
rough.
It is rough, but it's still a damn well-written song.
So, yeah, listen to this pretty heavy subject matter for the 80s. This is You're All I Need by Motley Crue.
So I put you to sleep.
Yeah, so Kiss is singing about having a reason to live, and Motley Crue is singing about killing a girlfriend. So.
And it's funny to think back, you know, in a song like that, imagine the mental picture in the mind of a 12-year-old listening to
it's
that.
It's pretty heavy stuff.
And you know, and it makes me think even further that, you know, in 87, it's different, so much different than today. And everybody says, oh, it was so much better back then, the music was better. Mm-hmm. Here is why I think that is. In 1987, you had to go buy an album or a cassette tape, you know, and you'd wait for that day to come because you knew it was coming. You know, your favorite Metal Edge magazines or Hit Parade or everything, whatever, would let you know ahead of time. You'd look forward to the album coming out as a young man or young child, you know, or young kid. And then, you know, the day comes when it comes out and you go to the music store and you get it and you're so excited and, you know, you can't wait to get it home. And you get home and you put on your headphones or you sit down with your buddies and you play it and you listen to the whole thing and you listen to the lyrics, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a special spiritual kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
That
connection.
You just don't get anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. How many kids sit down and think about, you know, really think about the lyrics to, you know, My Chemical Romance song?
Or Nicki Minaj.
Or Nicki Minaj or Nickelback or whatever, you know. But back then with Motley Crue, you know, and Def Leppard and Kiss, you know, these albums came out and you anticipated them. Mm-hmm. And when they came, then it was like a special experience when you put it on, you listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then you put it on and listen to the whole thing again.
Yeah, you wore it out because you just paid money
out.
For it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was much different back then.
I think that's the difference.
I'm going to burst your bubble about what was good back then compared to now, though. It was October 30th, George Michael released Faith.
Finally, he kicked that freeloader to the side and broke up Wham and came up with his own stuff.
11 million copies sold.
Jeez.
And who can forget the freaking video? Jeez Louise, that thing got played all the time.
Who's buying this garbage in 1987?
11 million people.
11 million people.
And
album of the year for the Grammy Awards. Yeah. You know, there they are. You know, kicking ass again. Way to go, Grammy Awards in 1987.
Yeah, George Michael.
Jeez.
Should have been given it to Alice Cooper, who released Raise Your Fist and Yell.
I would rather, that would have been much more understandable in my eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Exodus. They came out with one, Pleasures of the Flesh.
Yeah, and this next one I want to talk about is the MSG, but instead of the Michael Schenker Group, they changed it to Macaulay Schenker Group.
Right,
Macaulay. I wonder if he hired Robin Macaulay just because it still worked as a name.
Yeah, you could have got somebody else, but they were really a great singer, you know, but they just, you know...
Talking to his manager, does his last name start with an M?
No, I'm sorry,
or
it doesn't.
Does his last name start with an M?
Yes.
To try to do my German accent.
That's good.
Yeah. And Robin Macaulay joined up with Michael Schenker. Robin Macaulay had a... look at the album cover for this album from back then. Robin Macaulay had what I would call a power mullet.
Yeah, he's got the Robert Fleischman going on.
Yeah, he's got
sure.
more hair on the top than he does on the back. And... this album is called Perfect Timing, and you know, they had a top 100 hit with Give Me Your Love, which, you know, for Michael Schenker, that was pretty good. You know, he was more of a guitar player's
right. This guy
hero.
Is known as, you're right, exactly, a guitar player's hero, German Yngwie Malmsteen.
But, you know, in this album, this song in particular, I loved this song back in 87. And this goes back to how different my perspective is now. Not that it's a bad song now. It's still a well-written, well-performed song, but it's definitely got 1987 written all over it.
Yeah.
So check this out. This is MSG with Give Me Your Love.
Than the eye can see. Tell you something, and maybe again I won't. 'Cause now you see me, but who knows, maybe you don't.
Doesn't that production value just scream 1987 to you?
If you're Michael Schenker, why do you even need a keyboard player? Why?
I
mean, that
in,
doesn't make sense.
Well,
that always bothered me about the split between Van Halen and David Lee Roth, you know, in mm-hmm. the album 1984. Damn, man, you're Eddie Van Halen. Why do you need a keyboard? Why?
Well, I will.
You don't need it.
Yeah, but that album, though, I'll give that one a pass because he did some pretty amazing stuff with the keyboard on that one.
Yeah.
You don't like Jump?
I mean, of course I like all those songs, but I mean, if I've got Eddie Van Halen in the band or Michael Schenker in the band, last thing I think I need is a keyboardist.
Well, it could be argued that Eddie Van Halen's the reason that a lot of these bands went to keyboards after that album was so big.
True. That's true.
Everyone followed suit, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
Because he certainly was the main influence on the guitar players of that era, for sure.
No doubt about it.
But yeah, so also released some heavier stuff released in October of 87. Sepultura released Schizophrenia, and Armored Saint released Raising Fear.
Armored Saint's awesome.
Very good band. You know, John Bush recently went back to them. And another overlooked instrumental album, Joe Satriani released Surfing with the Alien. I used to have that.
Yeah.
That was a good album. Moving into November, Black Sabbath released The Eternal Idol. And I know you've made the argument that some of these Sabbath albums from this era probably should be more considered Tony Iommi solo albums.
Kind of the same way I consider the Guns N' Roses of today the Axl Rose Band.
Yeah.
That's what it should be. I mean, it's still called Black Sabbath or it's still called Guns N' Roses, but we all know better. That's the Tony Iommi Band.
Yeah. One album that came out in November of 87 was Anthrax's I'm the Man, and I wore the hell out of that album.
Me too. Me too.
It actually sounds pretty cliched now. Most of it does, but at the time it was just so different from everything else.
And it really was. And the live version of I Am the Man with all the swearing and the jokes and stuff on it at 12 years old. You know, that is one of the coolest, most hilarious things I think I'd ever heard in my life. And yeah, I wore that tape out.
Is that and that's the one that had some of the covers on it also. Like they had
they did,
Sweet Leaf.
Was it Sweet Leaf or was it Sabbath Bloody Sabbath?
Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. Yeah. Sweet Leaf came later. But the live version of Caught in a Mosh is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome too.
That's
the album that really kind of got me into Anthrax.
Yeah.
Because I think somebody brought it to me with the, you know, the shock effect of, man, listen to all this swearing. It's so cool, you know. And then you actually listen to the rest of it and say, man, this whole thing is killer. And the next thing you know, no amount of pencils in the world will bring your cassette tape back from the dead.
Exactly. Yeah. One of my brother's friends had a copy of that on cassette, and we used to drive around playing because we couldn't listen to it at his house because his mom would have thrown it away. So you're too young for that. Something happened on December 23rd that has been repeated in interviews over and over and over again. Nikki Sixx suffered a heroin overdose and died and then was revived shortly later.
Yeah, that's a pretty well-known story.
His favorite story to tell.
And then he goes back and shoots up some more.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty... If you haven't read The Dirt, check that out.
That shows you just how bad heroin is, kids. Do not ever mess with heroin.
He walked home naked from the hospital, hitchhiked, and got home and then... shot up some more.
This man was dead. You know, you don't get more of a wake-up call than being dead and then coming back to life miraculously.
Yeah.
You don't just go do it again. But luckily for us and everybody else, you know, Nikki Sixx able to pull out of it and doing pretty good for himself today. Crew's still kicking it out there.
Touring
going on tour.
Kiss.
New album coming out.
Yeah.
Motley Crue's awesome. I love Motley Crue. Always have.
Overkill released two albums in 1987.
Yeah, they had the Fuck You,
the Fuck
I think,
You
the
album.
EP, and then Taking
Don't talk
Over.
To me like that.
I will.
What do you remember about the Taking Over album? You picked this one.
I remember, let's see, what was the big one off of there? That was, what's the name of the song? I know there's a ton of good ones on there. Deny the Cross, Wrecking Crew, Power Surge. I think that's the one we picked for the show.
Yeah,
Power Surge is a pretty awesome song off there. It's hard to pick one because it's just killer. And, you know, Overkill, they're just kind of getting started at this time. But again, you know, looking back at the roots of thrash metal, you know, there's a lot of rumbling starting to happen in 87 with bands like this coming out.
Yeah, that's the earliest.
And I love Overkill. I consider them one of the thrash pioneers and one of the best bands I ever had the opportunity to see live. And
I need
stuff.
To give them more of a shot. I mean, a friend of mine's band opened for them here in Nashville, but I've never really dug into their catalog, so I need to give them a chance. But
better be careful. They're heavy. Yeah. Mind yourself.
I just remember Welcome to the Gutter is the main thing I remember by them.
Yeah, and what's the main song they're known for? I'm drawing a blank now. I always love
that's the one I remember.
I always
most.
Love when we do that on the air and I draw a blank.
That's
it's
okay.
Like you know, that song. Here, like, just play this one. It's Power Surge by Overkill.
Hi, this is Rick Allen's left arm. You're listening to the Decibel Geek Podcast.
The Soft Taco, the newest great-tasting taco from Taco Bell.
Nuprin, little, yellow, different, better.
Now available Transformers decoys in specially marked packages.
Welcome back to the Decibel Geek Podcast. A little Doro Pesh and Warlock for you there.
That's a great tune.
Talking about 1987, that was the last Warlock album that was released.
Yeah, she'd go solo then, right?
Yeah, yep. And she's got a new song out now, too, I think.
Yeah, she's still out there making it happen also.
The song is pretty good. The video is horrendous.
It is?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Does it look like it's from 87?
It looks like it was filmed with 1987 equipment. Yeah,
nice.
It's about as low budget as it gets, and
so,
it's like,
you know, it's retro, man.
Well, it's her and her band walking through like some city, and like there's homeless people singing behind her, and it's really bad.
Must be a really good song though.
Song's pretty good. Yeah,
getting Warlock flash mobs.
But yeah, just
the homeless people.
Warlock flash mob.
I gotta tell you, man. I'm liking it here in 1987. I don't think I'm quite ready to go back to 2012 yet.
Not yet. A few things that we want to touch on we did this in chronological order, and we just got through December in the last segment. Go through some. These were albums that were released in 87, but through the good folks at Wikipedia, I could not find an actual release date.
Well, a lot of times I think the albums that, you know, they say we don't know what the release date is, and you look them up on websites and try to do your homework and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think these are albums that, you know, weren't a big deal at the time, but you know, in retrospect, people kind of have picked them up, but you know, don't know nothing about them at the time.
The Meat Puppets released Huevos.
Yeah, see, like that.
Kane Roberts, Alice Cooper's guitar player.
He was the big muscle man,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Lou Ferrigno looking dude. He had the machine gun guitar.
Oh, that guitar was cool.
That was a cheesy era for Alice. Raven released Life's a Bitch.
Who would win in a fight, Kane Roberts or the crazy Ultimate Warrior hockey player drummer from Raven?
I don't know. That'd be an interesting match. I think Kane Roberts would beat the shit out of him personally, but
maybe.
The Plasmatics were still hanging on. They released Maggots, the record.
Wendy O. Williams.
As opposed to Maggots, the disgusting little bugs that you find.
Yes, this was the record.
Anvil released Strength of Steel.
Anvil, we know how you feel about Anvil.
Yeah. Let's make an album with this letter of this letter. Or this letter and this letter. Zebra, who we talked about on the website, released 3.V. Warlock, who we mentioned, that was their last album, Triumph and Agony.
It's a good one.
Juice Newton released an album.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to mention that. Yeah, well, Juice Newton. Did you pick that one up in 87?
I have the whole discography, of course.
I bought it it came out.
Why don't I just make the joke for you?
I was in the mall waiting for them to throw the big gates open so I could rush inside and grab Emotion by Juice Newton.
Greatest Hits came out that year, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only album on the unreleased, unknown dates that you actually know the date of because you were there.
Yeah. First in line.
Number one Juice Newton fan.
Bands that were formed. Your favorite band, Ace of Base, was formed.
Oh, yeah. No, it's Ace. No, it's a different Ace, but yeah, Ace of Base.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Ace Frehley.
What was their song? Joyride or something like that?
I'm not falling for that one. I'm not. You've already gotten me for Juice Newton.
That might be somebody else. I don't know. But there were some good bands that were forming that year. Talking about like Alice in Chains and the Bullet Boys.
Yeah.
Danzig was doing his thing after, you know, being done with the Misfits for a little while.
Yeah, Color Me Bad.
Color Me Bad, yeah.
Local Nashville band Every Mother's Nightmare. Actually Memphis band technically, but they were here for a while too.
Was that the band where they were young kids? Is that what?
No, you're thinking of another Bad Creation, I think. That was a kids band, right?
Oh, ABC. I don't know.
No, Every Mother's Nightmare was kind of like a Southern rock band for 87. But
I remember them. I don't know a bunch about them now, but I remember they were good.
I remember. And then another a Nashville band, Intruder, which probably more well known in Europe, but they had a major label release, and they're from Nashville. I still know the guitar player for that group.
A real heavy band, right?
Yeah, pretty heavy. Green Day was formed in 87.
Oh, man.
Caius was formed in 87.
Caius is a great band.
Local H.
I love Local H, too.
Nirvana. was born in 1987.
Yeah, 87.
So a lot of people don't realize that they go back that far.
Right, and you got to remember, too, that, you know, even though Nirvana was, like, the figurehead of the alternative rock scene and you know, movement mm-hmm. many years down, well, not too many years down the line, but, you know, they came out in 87, the same year as, like, Junkyard and, like you said, Caius and, mm-hmm. you know, the Bullet Boys and Danger Danger.
Yeah, I was going to mention, some of the notable people that were born in 87 in part one, and we have to do the deaths now. Included in the death list from 1987, some talented people, Buddy Rich, Andy Warhol, and Peter Tosh died. So for that, I say, fuck you, 1987.
Yeah, and Peter Tosh, man, what a terrible way to go. That guy, jeez.
Rough.
You ever look up that story? That's pretty wild, pretty shitty story. Peter Tosh was a heck of a guitar player and a reggae, you know, was part of the Wailers,
yeah.
was
Bob
a big
Marley
part of the
Wailers,
Wailers,
yeah.
And was murdered in 1987.
Jamaica's a pretty crazy place.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to live there.
Bands that were disestablished in 1987, Husker Du, Modern English, and The Smiths. So for that, I say 1987 might have kind of rocked a little
bit.
Yeah,
you're back on our good side now, 1987.
Yeah, I don't miss any of those
guys. So we've had a pretty good time here today talking about 1987, wrapping it up from the two-part episode because there's just so much going on in the year in review. We want to, you know, throw it all to everybody, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. You know, so as always, we want to let you guys know all the music that we played, all the bands that we've talked about, you know, check it out for yourselves.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we're here. We're trying to, like we say, make a local music scene out of a worldwide audience. You guys are the worldwide audience, but together we're still a music scene as far as our love for hard rock and heavy metal. So get out there, support these bands, you know, check them out on iTunes,
yep.
Amazon, check out their websites. These bands are for the most part are still around.
And if you want to pick up some of this stuff through Amazon, we do put Amazon links for all these bands on the show notes for this episode. Just go to dbgeekshow.blogspot.com and you can go click a link and go straight to their store.
That's right. We're just doing our jobs, turning you guys on to some quality rock and roll.
So I'm going to get the playout song for 1987.
I'm not ready to go back to 2012 yet. Let's stick around in 87 for a little bit longer so we can go catch a Kiss concert and see Eric Carr kicking ass.
Well, we're going to go back for the attack.
Ah.
Released in 1987, Dream Warriors by Dokken from November. We'll see you next week.
Remember to check us out at dbgeekshow.blogspot.com, facebook.com/decibelgeek, and Twitter at decibelgeekpod. Also available for free on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.